This is Digital Story Podcast number 831, February 22nd, 2022. Today's theme is Lightroom versus Capture One Pro with a dash of Neo on the side. I'm Derek Story. For the longest time, Fujifilm photographers have heard that Capture One Pro is the best RAW processor for their files. But is that true? We review a head-to-head test with Lightroom to find out. Oh, and Luminar Neo is now available. How does it stand up against Luminar 4 and Luminar AI? All of this and more on today's TDS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. So I saw this article on F-Stoppers that I've been waiting for a long time. Now, I have read bits and pieces about processing Fujifilm files, and I'm talking about X-Trans specifically, in Lightroom versus Capture One Pro. Sometimes it'd be just Lightroom, sometimes it'd be just Capture One Pro. Bits and pieces everywhere. This article, which is titled, "Which Program Handles Fujifilm RAW Files Better? Lightroom or Capture One?" And I have the link to it in the show notes. They basically pit these two premier RAW processors against one another in a very detailed way so that we can take a look at which application for us, for our eyes, processes these RAW files better. So I want to read you some of the article because I think it's pretty good, and then I will talk a little bit about it as well. So here we go with the reading part, right? Fujifilm cameras predominantly use two types of sensors. The first kind of sensor is used in Fujifilm GF mount medium format cameras, a Bayer color filter array. The second kind is mostly used in Fujifilm X mount APS-C cameras, an X-Trans color filter array. In short, each sensor uses a different mosaic pattern for how the red, blue, and green pixels are arranged on the sensor. I like this that they come right out at the very beginning saying, look, we're not dealing with just one type of sensor here when we talk about Fujifilm cameras. And as many of us know, X-Trans is much different than almost anything else out there on the market. And the kind of files it produces are different too. And sometimes that is difficult to process if you're not Fujifilm, right? If you're not the people designing the actual camera. Back to the article. There's no clear answer as to which pattern is better between the two. However, there has been a lot of discussion about whether Lightroom is capable of managing images taken with X-Trans sensors. With Fujifilm medium format cameras, there's virtually no difference in how each of the film simulations are rendered. There is some back and forth between how Lightroom and Capture One work. However, for the most part, there's no clear winner. On the other hand, it's quite a different story when it comes to Fujifilm APS-C cameras. Lightroom seems to have some problems with X-Trans sensors. And there are subtle differences in how the film profiles are rendered too. Okay, I'm going to talk now for a second. This is what we have heard over the years. And at one time, we know Lightroom really had a hard time with X-Trans files. And then it got better and it got better. And now we're where we are today. And that's the reason why I wanted to talk about that, because this is not the Lightroom of 5 years ago. This is the Lightroom of today versus the Capture One Pro of today with today's Fujifilm cameras. Okay, so we got all the current stuff here, and now we have someone that looked at all this current stuff and has some things to show us. Back to the article. Capture One has slightly more saturated red tones in the skin. This appears more pleasing in comparisons to the Lightroom file, which leans a bit more toward the yellow tones. This is, of course, a matter of preference. However, the point is that for Fujifilm X-Trans cameras, there is a difference in how the film profiles are rendered. The other noticeable difference between Capture One and Lightroom is how each manages the lens profiles. Lightroom seems to do a better job at mitigating the vignette cast by the lens. Although Capture One does have a lens profile feature built into the software, it's not quite as impactful. It seems that Lightroom does a better job of preventing optical issues through the use of lens profiles. All right, so right now, if you're keeping score, it feels pretty much 1-to-1, okay? 1-to-1. A little better on the color, especially the red skin tones or the reds in skin tones with Capture One Pro. And a little bit better on the optical profiles with Lightroom. Although I want to comment on those optical profiles, but not quite yet. I'm going to hang on for just a second. Okay, back to the article. And we're going to talk about Capture One now processing these files. The first thing to notice is that Capture One image appears to have more contrast and vibrance. Due to these subtle differences, most people may likely prefer the results from Capture One. Although Lightroom does a better job of managing the vignette, but once again, some may prefer the darker corners. And this is where I'm going to jump in. It's interesting. I have noticed the darker corners on Capture One RAW processing basically the whole time I've had it. And it's not just with Fujifilm files. It's also with my Olympus files, my Pentax files, my Nikon files. I'm one of those weird people who sort of prefer it. It's very subtle. It draws the eye more to the center of the image. And I like it. Now, they have a tool right there in the optical tab, the lens tab, to, if you want, you can de-vignette with just a bit of a slider. So you can undo what they're doing. My belief has always been that Capture One Pro is not accidentally having that slight vignette on the images. They're doing it on purpose. And I think the reason why they're doing it on purpose is because most of the time it looks pretty good, the way that they do it. It's not like a bad lens hood vignette. It's much more subtle than that. So this is one of the things that actually makes me like Capture One Pro is this very subtle vignetting that happens in the RAW profiles. Okay, back to the article. Additionally, Lightroom seems to have a problem when it comes to rendering green tones from an X-Trans sensor. In a previous image, the blue and yellow tones were perfectly fine in how Lightroom rendered them. However, the green seems to cause a lot of problems. From the images that have been tested over the last month, it seems Lightroom mostly struggles with the color green. All of the other images tested did not demonstrate any issues. Effectively, this warming issue is going to be a problem if what you photograph contains a lot of green tones, for example, landscape photography. If you're a landscape photographer, you will likely come across this issue in your images. If you're creating content for social media, this may be a forgivable issue. If you're a professional photographer, it may be wise to avoid Lightroom and use Capture One instead. Let's go home stretch here, and then I'll have a few comments. Their final thoughts. Here we go. In this series of articles, we've covered Canon, Sony, and now Fujifilm. With Canon and Sony, the choice between Lightroom and Capture One was entirely down to personal preference. There was no clear way to determine a winner because both programs produced great results. With Fujifilm, there are objective differences that cannot be ignored. The warming issue creates unwanted variable for which there doesn't seem to be a reasonable fix. Essentially, it makes the images look like they have high ISO noise, regardless of what ISO they were shot at. If you shoot with medium format cameras, such as the GFX 100S and the new GFX 50S II, then the differences are negligible. Capture One and Lightroom perform admirably with Fujifilm medium format cameras. This may also be the case with some Fujifilm APS-C cameras that use the bare sensor. However, with Fujifilm X-Trans cameras, it is clear that Capture One is the better choice. So I love this article, not because of the results, because as I was going through the article, I did not know what the results were going to be. What I like about it is the way they went about it. And if you click on the link, you know, they have images and they have that slider, the sliding curtain slider, with the Capture One rendering on one side of the slider and the Lightroom rendering on the other side of the slider. And you can go back and forth and really look at how these two different processors, you know, handle these RAW files. And it's very interesting, and it's very illuminating, and it really helps you get to the bottom of things. The other part that I thought was very interesting that I liked a lot was drawing the distinction between shooting Fujifilm medium format cameras and Fujifilm APS-C with X-Trans sensors. With the medium format cameras, there's virtually no difference in how Lightroom and Capture One Pro performs. So if you're shooting with the GFX 100S, choose whatever you want. Well, choose whatever you want anyway, but it's not going to make any real difference in how the images look. It's only when you start getting into the camera, such as the X100V, that you might start to see some differences between the two apps. So this is a cool article. If you're into this, then go over and take a look at it at F-Stoppers. The final note I want to make is what they said in the final thoughts, which is, if you're shooting Canon, if you're shooting Sony, there was no real difference between the two processors. It really comes down to which application do you like using better. That's got to be great news for Canon users and Sony users, who've always kind of wondered, after listening to all the chatter from the Fujifilm folks, should I be looking at the other application? No, you don't have to. Use what you want. You just go out there and take good pictures. All righty, let's talk about Luminar Neo for a moment. So it is released. There has been a lot of talk leading up to the release of Neo. This is what they do. This is what Skylum does. They love to chat it up way before the application comes out. But now that it's out, you can buy it. You can get it for $79. So it's not a huge investment, and you get a lot of stuff with it. What I want to do first is just give you an overview of the application, Neo, and then talk about how it stacks up to Luminar 4, which has been my go-to version of Luminar, and Luminar AI, which came out after 4. All right, first of all, let's just talk about Neo itself. It's allegedly faster, okay, than the previous versions. The new engine we built, this is Skylum talking, for Luminar Neo is based on all the best solutions from our combined and evolved experience for maximum performance and creativity, and is developed for achieving complex creative results. Some of the things that you can do is adjust the light in your photo for creative control. You can control the exposure of the image based on distance from lens to independently adjust the background and foreground exposure. This is called the relight feature, and it is really cool. I've played with it. Automatically remove spots on your images caused by dust and dirt on your lens sensor. This is a new feature. And they also have clean up unwanted power lines from the skies in your cityscapes. And both of those are there in the same panel, both of those features. So that's the new stuff. Now, what I want to do is kind of like what we did with Olympus last week, comparing the new OM1 to the EM1 Mark III and the EM1 X, is let's see how these applications stack up against one another. Luminar 4, Luminar AI, and Luminar Neo. Luminar 4 has layers, AI does not, and then they came back for Neo. So Neo does have layers. Using raw images as layers, again, Luminar 4 does it, AI does not, Neo does it. And then the ability to use one editing tool multiple times, you can do that in Luminar 4, you cannot do that in AI, and you can do that in Neo. Another new feature in Neo, and this is under the hood stuff, speed of editing tool does not depend on the number of tools applied to the image. We've all experienced this, those of us that use Luminar, that as you start to apply a lot of different things to the image, it seems that the editing process itself slows down. The tools become less responsive. Okay, let's get into the tools, and this is where the real differences are. So you have luminosity masking in Luminar 4, not in AI, and you do have it in Neo. And now we get into a whole bunch of tools only in Neo, and here they are. AI-based masking, portrait background removal, AI sensor dust removal, AI power lines removal, and AI relight based on image depth. Those are all Neo-only things, okay? Now, in terms of tools that you get in all three versions, you get Sky Replacement AI, Enhance AI, Structure AI, and Skin Enhancer AI in all three versions of Luminar. Let's compare the number of editing tools. You have 32 in Luminar 4, 32 in Luminar AI, and 36 in Luminar Neo. A real difference in number of AI tools, however, 4 AI tools in Luminar 4, 10 AI tools in Luminar AI, and 13 AI tools in Luminar Neo. So you can definitely see the arc of the direction that Skylum's going with these apps. Some things that all three share: work as a plugin for Adobe Photoshop, work as a plugin for Adobe Lightroom, and also work as an editing extension for Photos. Now, they didn't specifically list this for Luminar Neo, but I tested it. The editing extension is there. It works great. It works just as well as my Luminar 4 editing extension. So those of you who use Photos, you can use Luminar Neo as an editing extension for Photos. It works great. Really good stuff. And the last thing I will say is that I'm using macOS Big Sur on my Mac laptop, version 11.6. And I will say that Luminar 4 is running very well on this hardware here and software. You can use Luminar 4, Luminar AI, and Luminar Neo on Intel-based Macs running current software. For Luminar Neo specifically, early 2010 or newer, and then Mac OS 10.14.6 or higher. By the way, on Windows, since we're right here at specs, OS version 10 version 1909 or higher, only 64-bit OS. So that's a look at Luminar Neo. They changed the interface around. Basically, what they've done is all the tools now have kind of this more streamlined look. And I think the big difference is that now this is just one list with headers. So you don't have to click on little tabs to look into the essentials or the creative or any of that sort of stuff. A ton of AI tools. I think overall the interface is actually quite pleasing, and it would be cool if they just kind of stuck with one look for a while. You have a tab at the top that allows you to go to edit mode or catalog mode, and then your layers now are stacked vertically on the left-hand side. So tools on the right, layers on the left, and then catalog and edit on top. So that's a look at Luminar Neo. It's nice. I think I'm going to be fine with Luminar 4, though, and probably will just stick with that for the time being. Right, here's a fun little poll that I took with our Inner Circle members titled, "How do you listen to the TDS podcast?" And the reason why is I'm in the middle of doing some work here at the studio. My podcast recording room is in total disarray. I am gutting it, reworking it, cleaning it out, lightening it up, doing all that stuff. So over the last few weeks, I have been recording the podcast here in the Zoom room, in the Zoom recording room, and using different hardware, different mics, all that kind of stuff. Now, here's an interesting thing. When I produce a podcast, I listen to it all sorts of different ways. I listen to it on Apple AirPods. I listen to it in my car going to work the next day. I listen to it just using the speakers on the mobile device, and I listen to it on speakers just on my laptop. So I have all these different ways to listen to it because it sounds different on all these devices. So I was curious if I'm going to fine-tune the podcast now for this new hardware setup that I have, at least temporarily. It's going to take me a while to redo that other room, probably a couple months. I want to tune it to how people are listening to the show. So I made this poll, and I thought you'd be interested in what our Inner Circle members had to say about how they listen to the TDS podcast. Number one, Apple AirPods. Apple AirPods was the number one way that they listen to the podcast. Number two, car audio speakers was in the second position, not too far behind AirPods. So AirPods were number one, car speakers, number two. Number three surprised me a little bit, using the built-in speakers on my laptop or mobile device. And I'm going, wow, I'm glad that's one of the ways I listen to the podcast to test it. And thinking, wow, not that many people do that. It looks like a lot of people do that. So that was good to know. This is why you do polls, right? Number four, wired earbuds. Number five, over-the-ear headphones. There are still folks out there that use cans, yes. And number six, the home audio system. So that was the order of how people listen to the TDS podcast. And there were a few fun comments. I'm going to read you three of them right now. Again, from our Inner Circle members. The car was always my favorite place for podcasts, but I don't commute now, so it's starting to move more to playing in the house on HomePod. Occasionally, I will listen on a walk with AirPods, but it's been cold enough to wear a beanie or they won't stay in my ears. So I guess some folks, the AirPods don't quite work right unless you're wearing a beanie. And one of those folks is Andrew, one of our Inner Circle members. All right, here's what Jeff had to say. I almost always listen while driving. If I do listen at home, it's usually when I'm doing yard work using over-the-ear headphones. If I try to just listen, usually get so distracted with something that I never actually listen and have to go back and listen again. That was Jeff. Not quite sure how to take that, but if he's just listening, then I got to up my game a bit, right, to keep his attention. He starts getting distracted with other things. Jeff, I do not take this personally. I completely understand. And then the third comment is, transistor radio was not an option. That was from John. John has a very dry sense of humor, and he's been in a number of our online workshops. I just love him to death. All right, so there you go. There's a little Inner Circle news for you, how these folks have been listening to the TDS podcast. I'm in the process of tuning this show for all these different ways. Thank you for bearing with me during the transition. I know that some weeks it might sound a little different than other weeks, but I'm getting there. I'm getting there. Last week I talked about the release of the Olympus OM1, and there's a special offer they're offering. And now that those of you who shoot Micro Four Thirds have had a chance to think about this camera, maybe do a little bit of reading and so forth, I want to reiterate, though, this offer that they have going on right now, because I think it's a big deal. So I'm just going to touch on the offer, which is a free battery plus a 3-year extended warranty with the purchase of the OM1, but the offer's only valid between February 15th, when they announce the camera, and March 3rd. So it's basically for pre-orders. They're going to start shipping the camera only, the body only, on March 3rd. And then if you buy the bundle with the new 12-40 Pro 2 lens, that bundle starts shipping on March 15th. So if you want the special offer, you just have to buy before March 3rd. Here's what they say here. To celebrate the introduction of our newest flagship camera, the OM System OM1, we're happy to provide you additional peace of mind through our special extended warranty offer. Simply complete your product registration and we'll give you a complimentary 3-year extended warranty on the OM1 body, which stretches your limited warranty coverage to 4 years from the date of your original camera purchase. That is really nice. So all you have to do is pre-order, and you can pre-order through, you know, any authorized OM system dealer. They all should be offering, you know, the free battery part of it, and then the extended warranty is just you registering it, and you let them know when you purchased it when you fill out your warranty card. Pre-order the OM System OM1 or the OM System OM1 and M. Zukio Digital ED 12-40 F2.8 Pro 2 kit from your favorite OM System retailer. Receive an additional OM System BLX1 battery for free with your OM1, so you get that extra battery. By the way, remember, the battery is a different size than the other OM cameras. This is a brand new battery. You only have one when you buy the camera. You get the second one, is really nice. Register your OM1 camera at getolympus.com/register within 45 days of purchase. Receive an email confirmation of your 3-year extended limited warranty. Hold on to that email confirmation. You'll need it along with the valid receipt from your camera purchase as proof of your extended warranty if you ever need assistance. If you are going to buy this camera, I would appreciate it if you bought it through one of my affiliate sites. So if you're going to buy it through B&H, then I have a link right here in the show notes with this. Or you can just click on the tile that's on all the pages of the digital story and then navigate to the OM1. If you use the link in the show notes, it'll take you right to the OM1 camera. And if you buy on Amazon, same thing. If you start at the tile that's on all the pages of the digital story and then navigate to the camera and buy it there, it helps support the site. If you get excited and you're going to buy it, not only this camera, but basically anything that you would buy from those two online outlets. If you go to the digital story first, it really helps support the show. Click on those tiles and then make your purchase. All right, let's take care of a little virtual camera club news. First thing I want to do is thank our Inner Circle members. These are the folks that support this podcast month in and month out. And provide us with fun stuff, such as, how do you listen to the TDS podcast? If you're interested in becoming an Inner Circle member, part of this elite community that supports this show, then just click on the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the digital story. Take a look around. If you like what you see, join us. Remember, you get big discounts on all workshops, whether they're online or in person. And if you just go to one physical workshop, you save more money by being an Inner Circle member than it costs you to be an Inner Circle member for an entire year. That's pretty cool, right? You save more money than what you pay just by going to one physical workshop. If you go to an online workshop, you also save nicely. So it pays, especially if you're going to be participating. But if you're not going to be participating in workshops, it's still cool to be an Inner Circle member. There's other benefits as well. And a big thanks to all of our Inner Circle members. And finally, I want to give a huge shout out to our friends at Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of the digital story. Right now, in that room that I'm reworking, right, the studio room, there are boxes of Red River Paper everywhere. And one of the many things I'm doing in that room is organizing all of this cool paper that I've accumulated over the years. And one of the nice things about it is this paper does not go bad. This paper is in great shape. I have it. I have all these different surfaces. Some of them got buried. I didn't even know where they were. I'm getting it all organized. I might take a picture, actually, when I get it done, of my stack of Red River paper all organized in one of the closets. Red River Paper also has a wonderful Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. It is so much fun to have all these different surfaces and all these different sizes, so you can do any project you want when you're ready to do it. Go over to their site, nose around, get your hands on some paper, and make some beautiful prints. And a big thanks to Red River Paper for supporting this podcast. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. Fun stuff, good software, good times. I'm working on some great stuff for next week. Make sure you come back and join me. Until then, be safe, be creative. See you next Tuesday.